702.
Weekend Breakfast
with Googs Mshungu. Let's walk the talk.
16 minutes after 6 o'clock, joined now by Dr. Sean Thornley to speak about psychedelics. Over the last couple of years, there has been people saying they are using psychedelics to treat various ailments. You may have heard of the term microdosing, but what exactly does it mean? And we've got Dr. Sean Thornley, who's a general practitioner and anesthesiast at the Take Care Clinic, on the line to speak to us about this. Dr. Thornley, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Hi, good morning, Googs. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining us. So, Doctor, when we speak about psychedelics, what exactly do we mean? What are psychedelics?
Psychedelics are mind-altering substances. They had a hugely bad rep in the 1960s, and people have images of hippies running around taking drugs and seeing colors and kaleidoscopes. But essentially, these are mind-altering substances, cognition-altering substances that cause altered states of consciousness in people. And the traditional psychedelics are magic mushrooms. I think the term magic mushrooms is a bit of a misnomer these days. The active ingredient in that is a drug called psilocybin. And the other one is LSD. And so these substances have had a bit of a revival and a bit of a renewal in the last few years, with really reputable universities conducting studies on the therapeutic benefits of these substances, and used in the right setting, under the right controlled environments, they show some potential benefit for people.
I want to start with where you, well, go back to where you started about. For many of us, when we think of psychedelics, we think of, you know, kind of the disco time, the free love time, and, you know, bell bottoms and afros and kind of that time. And you said they do have quite a bad reputation. Is it because psychedelics in the past were seen to be quite harmful, or did they have a bad reputation because, I guess, all mind-altering substances generally, there's a taboo around them? Why did they have a bad reputation, and why is that changing?
So I think that the governments and that were very scared that people changing their minds, it's difficult to control them. And so they were very scared in the 1960s, and the Nixon regime in America shut down all research and evidence. You know, there were a lot of wars going on around that time, and it was difficult for people to join a war or support a war when they were experiencing free love and mind-altering states of consciousness. So all of the evidence and support for clinical trials was completely shut down in that stage. And obviously, just like any mind-altering substance, whether it's alcohol or marijuana, you have to be extremely careful with these substances. And there's certain people that can take them and certain people that can't take them. And so as the years have gone on, really reputable researchers from institutions like Johns Hopkins in Baltimore in America and Imperial College in London have started reviving the clinical trials comparing microdoses and macrodoses of these substances for patients that have got certain clinical indications, such as depression that is refractory to conventional medication, alcohol use disorder, smoking cessation, and anxiety associated with a cancer diagnosis. So there's been some revival of research, and really interesting things have come out in the last few years. Obviously, there's a huge crisis in the mental health at the moment. The COVID pandemic has really pushed people into huge states of anxiety and worsened their underlying depressions. And so obviously any new form of potential treatment for people that comes out that shows good evidence and safety is accepted, is very accepted in the medical field.
Mm-hmm. When we speak about microdosing, what does that mean? How is that different to, say, when someone would be taking a psychedelic recreationally?
So the dosing obviously is substantially lower with the microdose. The microdosing is not supposed to actually induce any mind-altering effects. You shouldn't be having a trip, so to speak. You shouldn't be hallucinating microdose is supposed to have a sub-perceptual effect on your system, similar to effects of taking a long-term antidepressant, for example. But there have been studies on microdosing that have shown quite significant benefit and equal benefit to some antidepressants, for example. A lot of people use it for creativity in their work environment and that thing, but I really do urge people to be very cautious with these substances, whether it's microdosing or macrodosing. They most certainly shouldn't take these things lightly, and they should definitely discuss this with a healthcare professional before venturing down that path.
Mm. And, you know, one of the things, as we're learning now, there seem to be some medical benefits relating to depression and anxiety, and some benefits relating to smoking and alcohol abstinence. But what are some of the side effects? And I think this is why you were saying that it is quite important to speak to a registered medical practitioner. What are the side effects? A question that keeps coming up with regards to the use of psychedelics is, are they addictive, for instance?
So they've definitely been shown not to be addictive, like the traditional substances such as alcohol and cocaine and stimulants, etc., that are most certainly addictive. These substances haven't been shown to have an addictive effect. Obviously, anyone can be addicted to any substance psychologically. So what they found, though, is that these substances don't create an addictive potential in people. Where people have to be careful is that they're using these substances recreationally in the wrong environment. And we talk about set and setting, so the patient's mindset going into these experiences, and the actual setting where they take these substances has to be very stringently controlled. And that the best evidence for these is in a medical setting with a psychotherapist there that's with you. Obviously, there is a potential for someone to have the so-called bad trip, and this can induce a huge state of panic and fear and anxiety in someone. And if you're taking it in the wrong setting, obviously, it can be quite frightening for people. So I think if it's used responsibly in the right setting, there potentially is a lot of benefit for it. We also have to remember that there is it's still illegal in South Africa, and so there is no legal framework for it here in South Africa. So people that come and ask us these questions, we have to remind them that, unfortunately, the evidence usually trickles down from places like America and the United Kingdom, and it may take several years before this becomes a treatment modality that we can actually prescribe to people. So people do have to be very careful from a legal side, and also very careful that they don't experience these substances in the wrong setting.
Because that was going to be my next question, is, you know, what is the prevalence of the use of psychedelics for the treatment of certain medical conditions in South Africa? How far are we with that research? And if it is illegal, are we doing any research at all that perhaps you know of on the use of these substances?
I think all the research that's happening in South Africa at the moment is anecdotal. I think there are a few institutions that are looking at implementing clinical trials for these substances.
Mm-hmm.
But everything at the moment is just off-label and anecdotal. I think a lot of people come through to doctors and they say, look, I was referred to such and such a person and I underwent this such experience, and I either had a positive or a negative effect. And very often they have a positive effect, but I do urge people to be very cautious, especially if they're already taking antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. Anybody with a family history of any psychosis or a personal history of any psychosis or a psychotic disorder, such as schizophrenia, you've got to be very careful that we don't induce states of psychosis for them. So, yes, the evidence is coming down, but it's still in the very early phases and in the very early days. And, you know, it's obviously very promising, and it's nice to have something else in our armamentarium to treat mental health disorders. But I urge people to be very cautious in that it's still very early days.
In terms of, you know, when we speak about the potential benefits of psychedelics, they're obviously specific ingredients or parts of those particular, you know, whatever's in magic mushrooms, for instance, whatever's in LSD that is being used for treatment. Do we know, outside of the form of the psychedelic, if those active ingredients, whatever they may be, is there any research, any work being done to isolate whatever those compounds are, whatever those particular ingredients are, and see if those could work outside of the form of a psychedelic?
Yeah, absolutely. There is evidence going on for that, and that would be the most ideal, is to isolate a preparation where there wouldn't be the so-called trip experience. I mean, the trip experience would be quite frightening for a lot of people. And so the work with the psilocybin, the magic mushrooms, is looking at the serotonin receptors and the 5-HT2A receptor in particular. And as of today, we're not entirely sure exactly how this compound works on that receptor. So I think the evidence to isolate it and to create a compound that might give the potential positive therapeutic benefits without the negative side, I think, is definitely what they're looking at the moment. And I think the studies with microdosing, for example, are quite exciting in that regard as well, because there is that hallucinogenic experience is not there for people with the microdosing usually. So yes, to answer your question, I think there is evidence for it. There's studies going on at the moment to try and isolate those compounds and find out just exactly how they work.
Is that what we've done with cannabis? So there's been quite a boom in products involving hemp, or, for instance, cannabis oil for inflammation, or cannabis for pain. Is that a similar thing to what has been done with cannabis? We kind of took out the thing that we thought would help with, for instance, inflammation, and then used that to make oils and other products that we now see on the market. Is that similar to what we're discussing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and if you just talk about cannabis, if you can recall, say, 10 years ago, what a bad rep someone that would smoke weed was. And obviously, yes, it's got to be used responsibly as well. But these days, medical marijuana and the isolates of medical marijuana definitely have therapeutic potential in treating certain conditions. And in fact, you can prescribe these medications. If you take out the mind-altering substance of THC in cannabis and you just extract the CBD component to that, for example, there's certain uses for that, such as for anxiety and for sleep. And you can actually go and purchase these CBD containing compounds right over the counter at Dischem or Click. So I think, you know, this is the type of research that we're hoping filters through, so that we can actually one day have treatment with magic mushrooms, but in a controlled setting without the hallucinogenic effect, in a safe environment where people get positive benefit from these treatments. And that's obviously the long-term goal.
And unlike psychedelics with marijuana, the rules, I mean, one of the things you were saying was, in South Africa, the law still doesn't allow the use of psychedelics, certainly for medical practitioners to be using them. But that is different with marijuana or cannabis, in this instance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what are we currently able to do with regards to cannabis?
So CBD is definitely available. You can purchase CBD from pharmacies. In fact, you can get it over the counter. Your medical practitioner can prescribe CBD for you. And certain people do have huge benefits from a sleep and anxiety and chronic pain and inflammation side. The THC is still quite regulated, so that's the full spectrum THC in cannabis, and it does require quite a lot of paperwork to have that authorized for patients for specific medical indications. So medical practitioners can obtain THC for their patients, but there is obviously quite a process to go through for that. But there are companies that do assist with these forms, and patients can apply for them online with their healthcare practitioner.
Dr. Thornley, thank you so much for your time this morning.